Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Isn't this the height of hypocrisy? Pete Hegseth says something in 2016 specifically about Donald Trump. I sense something generically about you must follow the law, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. His case, it seems to be fine. My case... the president wanted me hanged, executed, prosecuted, and now they want to demote me.
Since you're not reading the letters and the refusals that we've already sent you, I will say it to you directly, Mr. Jesus Olcete at the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. Again, sir, pound sand.
We wish Gilbert resident Jay Seeley well in this campaign, but from our perspective, nothing's changed. We are extremely confident Gina Swoboda will be the Republican nominee in Arizona 1.
It shouldn't be viewed as a typical American adventurism type of issue. What we're doing is we're enforcing the law from a guy who was the head of a cartel that was coming after the U.S.
Our intention, at least to start, is to send up conformity so that everybody, small businesses included, can file their taxes more quickly.
And with me to talk about the DOJ suing Arizona Secretary of State, another presidential endorsement in an Arizona congressional primary, and more are Lorna Romero-Ferguson of Elevate Strategies. Lorna, good morning.
Good morning.
And former state lawmaker, former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, Raquel Turan. Raquel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So let's start with the Department of Justice, Raquel, which is suing Secretary of State Adrian Fontes. I guess in some ways, maybe not such a surprise. They've done this in other states. Fontes has said repeatedly he's not going to turn over this information. I'm curious, like, he is obviously up for election this year. How does this roll into that?
Well, I think he's doing the right thing, and he's very direct. I heard him say, take me to jail if you need to, because what he's doing right now is making sure that we are protecting all the information of the voters of Arizona, the Social Security numbers. Even though some information is already public, but certain information has to remain confidential. And he is following the law. He's following the state law, and he's following federal law. And frankly, in my opinion, this is just to try to foment that there is voter fraud, and we already know it's non-existent.
Lorna, do you think Fontes is doing the right thing here? With the stipulation that I don't think any of the three of us are lawyers.
Yeah, for full disclosure, not an attorney here. But we've talked about it previously on the show when the DOJ made that initial request and Fontes said pound sand back then before this lawsuit. The context of which this is all coming from is very important, as Raquel just noted on. This is all in the context of what happened in the 2020 election and the fraud that they claim and that people still are talking about and claiming that there was fraud, which has been made abundantly clear that there was no fraud, especially in Arizona. So in a state like Arizona, where Secretary Fontes has this duty to oversee this very important, sensitive, confidential information and what we've been through for the past 6 years, it makes sense that he's pushing back. Why do you want this information? What are you going to do with it? What are the intentions? Yes, take me to court and we'll try to figure this out. But I mean, if the DOJ and the Trump administration just wants this information to further claim that, you know, he wrongfully lost the 2020 election and or to foment going into 2026 any potential fraud in Arizona, which we know is not that's just not true. That is not helpful for our democratic system in general. And so he is doing the right thing. He has to protect this voter information. And we need to get to a point where we've moved on from 2020, even 2022, yeah. You know, with Carrie Lake and some others, and just focus on how do we restore trust in our election system and just move forward so we can have a successful 2026 election.
Yeah. And he needs to continue going. He needs to continue the efforts to protect the voters of Arizona. And I think it really is a reminder that Donald Trump and his administration do not run our elections. It's the Secretary of State, and I'm looking forward to him continuing this stance.
Raquel, do you think this will play a role in the campaign? He's going against the the Republican presumed nominee. I don't think there's anyone else in that primary right now. Alexander Colladin, who is an election skeptic, I think is maybe the way to say it. Does this issue play a role in that campaign?
I mean, it's unfortunately it becomes so political. The Secretary of State should not be this political. This race should be about who will administer our elections and making sure that they're administered correctly and that voters are protected and that their votes count. And when you have these type of issues, yeah, they become political, but it helps them be in the forefront protecting the voters of Arizona. That is what he has said from his first campaign. And I remember his slogan, protecting our democracy or protecting our republic's democracy. That's what he used to say. And that's what he will continue to say. And it puts him in a position where he can demonstrate that that is what he is doing.
Lorna, does this help him? I mean, we've talked on the show before about how Arizona voters broadly, when you take it out of, example, the GOP primary, tend to not be super enamored of election conspiracy theories mm-hmm. and election yeah. denialism. Does this help him going for reelection?
Potentially. I mean, it's really hard to say January 2026, you know, what it's going to look like in, sure. in the general. Yeah. But it is going to be a campaign issue. And it's a high profile issue that we're talking about it now. And the mm-hmm. media is going to continue to talk about it. So the days of the Secretary of State race being a snooze fest like it was 10 years ago is no longer the case because we are talking about election integrity, potential fraud, et cetera. So obviously the Trump administration is making this a major issue. We know the Republicans who are going to be running against, it's most likely Colladin, is going to make it an issue. So it remains to be seen how voters are going to fluctuate going up to this election cycle because, I mean, in Arizona, we've been talking about potential fraud for so long, right? I'm not sure if that's going to be the lead issue on voters' mind with the right. economy and yeah. other things going on. But, yeah, it could potentially help him depending on Trump's favorability and everything else that's going on with the Trump administration.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe this is not necessarily tied into it, but voters in Arizona trust our process. The fact that more than 90% of voters receive their early ballot at home, their ballots at home, shows that they believe in this process. So I think that the good thing is that we know that voters don't believe that there is that kind of fraud happening here in Arizona.
Raquel, let me stick with you on another story of the federal government going after an Arizona politician. This week, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth formally started the process of he censured Senator Mark Kelly. He started the process of trying to demote him from his military rank, which would affect the pension he has. Again, this is not necessarily a surprise. This move has sort of been telegraphed. Yeah. But I'm curious, like, what you make of Kelly's response to all of this. He's been pretty defiant.
He has been defiant and he is meeting the moment. This is Mark Kelly's moment. And I think like he has always been a hero. I mean, the fact that he has been in combat, he's been a veteran. And he says in his statements have said it all. No, I've fought for our country. And that includes making sure that we're protecting our Constitution. We're protecting our First Amendment. Right. And he has been responding for himself, but at the same time, I think that the way that he has responded shows to service members that he has their back and that he doesn't want this to trickle and that the silence could trickle to other service members. So, in my opinion, Senator Mark Kelly is really fighting back in a way that sends a message that this has to stop with him and it cannot continue.
Lorna, what do you make of the way that Kelly has been responding to this? I mean, he's been everywhere. He was on The Daily Show this week. He was on NPR this week on Morning Edition. He's been on a lot of the cable networks. Like, he's talking about this a lot.
Yeah, he's really seizing the moment and the opportunity, which it's not surprising. I mean, you're being personally attacked, something that is very dear and important to him is his service to this nation, right? And it's become a very political issue for the Trump administration. It's not like they're just kind of going after him. They're being very public and vocal about this. So, of course, he's going to do the same in his defense. Right. I do think that it's probably just a waste of time from the Trump administration, in all honesty. Senator Mark Kelly should not be surprised by the criticism that's being received by the Trump administration. Anybody who speaks out against them, they come out in force against Republican or Democrat, right? But I think he knew going into this that he was going to potentially have a target on his back, right? Filming that video, being in a high profile ranking that he is in the military, all of the service that he's had, being a U.S. senator in a state like Arizona, a swing state, that they were going to go after him. And so, unfortunately, and mind you, again, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know the nuances of if he actually violated any kind of uniform code of military conduct or whatnot. Sure. But it just seems like there's a lot going on that the Secretary of Defense should be focusing on. And the fact that so much time and energy is being put on Mark Kelly is just giving him more popularity and more opportunities to talk to the media and build his name ID nationally than a few months ago.
Well, so let me ask you about that, because there's been a lot of discussion on social media, noted bastion of deep intellectual thinking, that, you know, all this is really doing is elevating Mark Kelly leading into the 2028 presidential election. Mm-hmm. Of course, his name has been out there. He was apparently, shortlisted for vice president when Kamala Harris was running last year or 2 years ago now. So, I mean, do you see this as sort of an elevation of Mark Kelly nationally?
100%. I mean, like you were just saying, he's on all these national programs. You see the fundraising emails all the time. Like, his team is capitalizing on it, which no criticism to them. Anybody would, right, in this situation. So, yes, they are elevating his profile nationally. That might be intentional because they're hoping to just kind of like, you know, harm his reputation should he choose to run in 2028, what he intends to do in the future. But also they want to, you know, restore Republican leadership in the state when it comes to the U.S. Senate. Right. So from the Trump administration, they're probably looking at it as we want to damage his reputation as much as possible, leading into whatever direction he chooses to go in, whether that's, again, running for U.S. Senate or nationally. And obviously he's not cowering to that. And he is taking the opportunity to build his network, increase his name ID, fundraise, et cetera, beyond those people who already knew who Senator Mark Kelly was, whether it was from gun control, you know, advocates or just from his military service or you know, being an astronaut. You know, some people just followed that. So he's really broadened his name ID to a new audience.
Raquel, do you think this is elevating him?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like what he is showing is that he is somebody that can fight back. Right. Because Mark Kelly, I mean, his story from being the husband of Gabby Giffords and being by her side every single step of the way, being an astronaut, being in the military, everything. But people know him as the good guy. And then Arizona is a unique place to campaign. And his story was just it connected with so many Arizonans. And the fact that people across the country are getting to see the way that he can fight back for Arizona and for everybody, for that matter, I think it's really, really good for him. And I'll just end like, you know, Kamala Harris, she did write in her book that Mark Kelly had not had his moment. And I think this is his moment. So that's interesting to see what happens in the presidential primaries.
Lorna, let me start with you on the first congressional district. This is the seat that David Schweikert will be leaving as he runs for governor now. Kind of a swingish type district as far as competitive districts in Arizona go. It's a competitive primary. Gina Swoboda, the chair of the state Republican Party, announced she's running. Joseph Chaplick, a state representative, has announced he's running. Jay Feely, former NFL player with the Cardinals and other teams, has announced he is running. And now President Trump had endorsed Swoboda, has now also endorsed Jay Feely. This is obviously not something that Trump is not known to do. He's endorsed two candidates in the GOP gubernatorial primary. But I'm curious how you see, like, what kind of impact you see that having on that race?
You know, and we've talked about this in the context of the gubernatorial race with Biggs and Karen Taylor Robson both having the Trump endorsement, and it kind of just evens the playing field, right, for the candidates. Because in the past, you know, Trump would endorse one primary candidate and people were vying for that endorsement. Mm-hmm. And the person who got it, the general wisdom was in a primary, you're basically going to be the nominee because the Trump endorsement was that important. When it's shared, you know, everyone's going to say, I'm the Trump endorsed candidate, but it doesn't really move the needle as much when it's multiple people, right? So then it comes down to the actual campaign. A name ID, which Gina has some with, you know, people who follow Republican Party politics, you know, PCs and whatnot. Jay Feely probably has a little bit more given the fact that he's a former, you know, Arizona Cardinals football player. And even though he switch districts from the East Valley to this one. It's really going to come down to who runs a better campaign in that district, who can fundraise, who can build the infrastructure, because the Trump endorsement, like I said before, is just going to kind of level that playing field a little bit more. And it's a smart move by the Trump administration at this point, because I think they're looking for as many wins as possible. So being able to kind of share the love in terms of endorsements.
Hedging his bets
You know, so then he can say, oh, my endorsed candidate won the primary. And then they can just obviously fully support them in the general. But it's really going to be who runs the more effective campaign in that district that you said is very much on paper a swing district. Republican voters there tend to lead much more moderate. It's not typically the more MAGA crowd. So it'll be interesting to see what types of campaigns these folks run.
Raquel, we heard a little bit in the montage at the beginning of the newscap from a campaign consultant for Swoboda who referred to Jay Feely as Gilbert resident Jay Feely. Lorna referenced that he was in a different congressional district running in the Andy Biggs district. He, of course, is also running for governor. Does that matter? I mean, obviously, you don't have to live in the district to be a member of Congress. That's not a rule. But to voters, will that matter?
I think, well, first and foremost, Trump endorsements for everybody, please. As a former chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, we want everybody to get endorsed in primaries in a competitive seat. I think that is a gift for Democrats. I'm excited about that because this district has been – we've lost it. Democrats have lost this district by very, very little. And I think one of the reasons has been because there has been an incumbent. And now that it's an open seat, it's an opportunity for Democrats, even though right now there is a competitive primary with the Democratic Party as well. And but the issues that Democrats are talking about, even in the primary, are about affordability, are about things that people care about. And the disaster that has happened with Donald Trump's administration all past year really helps us. So the more endorsements that the Republicans get from Donald Trump in that district, the better. But I think at the end of the day, you can make the case that somebody is not from the district, but it is about who knocks on doors, who reaches the voters, how your story will be compelling. And we've seen it in the past. Voters connect to what people say, to the values versus just facts.
Lorna, do you think a Trump endorsement, obviously, I would imagine it helps in the primary. Mm-hmm. Does it help in the general election in this district?
Probably not as much, given the makeup of that district. And if you look back to see how David Schweiker won the last few election cycles, everybody went into each election cycle saying this is the year Schweiker gets taken out by a Democrat and he wins. Right. He threaded that needle beautifully, which I think someone needs to do a deep analysis on, of not upsetting the Trump administration, but not being a vocal cheerleader about them as well. Right. And so whoever wins the primary, I mean, a lot of their messaging in the primary, like Raquel was just referencing, is going to be used against them in a general election,
100%,
right? And
yeah.
So they have to be careful, understanding that, yes, they need to be able to get, you know, that majority support to become the nominee. But how does that pivot and translate to the broader audience of CD1 for a general election, right? So it really is going to come down to how they run their races and how these individuals kind of thread that needle like Schweiker did, you know, in all honesty, to keep kind of the Trump supporters happy while also being able to appeal to the independents and the moderates in that district who are swing voters that we've seen in previous election cycles.
How difficult a needle is that to thread?
It is very difficult. That's what I'm saying. Someone needs to analyze how Schweiker – because, I mean, every – you look at it, Juan Ciscomani in his district, similar makeup, right? But for some reason, more attention gets put on Juan when it comes to Trump than Schweiker did in the past, right? How does that happen? You know, it's an interesting dynamic that we've seen, that some candidates get a lot more of that Trump pressure versus others, even though they're in equally similar situations when it comes to the competitiveness of their district.
Mm. All right. So, guys, just a few minutes left. I want to ask you about something. Usually we look back at the week. I want to ask you about something coming up next week. Of course, the state legislature coming back into session. Governor Hobbs on Monday will be giving her a State of the State speech. Raquel, you served in the legislature. I'm curious, like, how would you describe what you think this session is going to look like?
Oh, wow. Well, I think the conversation will be about affordability. We have seen that not only that it is a winning issue, but it's also what it's what's on top of people's minds. So we are going to see, hopefully, my hope is that we see Democrats really, really closely with the governor to get the best budget possible. And also, I hope that we get to see the legislature address Proposition 123 mm-hmm. on education.
That's the school funding initiative.
Yes, that has to be a top priority.
Lorna, what do you think this session is going to look like?
I think it's going to really come down to the state budget and finances, right? You have obviously we're not in the best financial situation in the state currently, and there's a number of things that are coming up that require significant costs on the state. So tax conformity is one of the big issues that obviously Governor Hobbs has talked about, and Republican leaders in terms of conforming to the One Big Beautiful Act bill, which contains a number of tax changes that Arizonans, families, middle class families, small businesses care about and want to make sure happen in 2026, right? But that's a decision made by the legislature. So that's one. We have obviously the ongoing question about education funding and Prop 123. Does that go back to the ballot to then remove that $300 million off the general fund? And then you have the impending kind of healthcare cost crisis that's going to come next year, when the full implementation of H.R. 1 comes into effect and there's drastic cuts to Medicaid.
Right.
So does the legislature do some forward thinking on that, or do they punt until next year and say, well, we'll deal with it to see when we see the actual cuts happen to the state? And then you also have water, right? Big issue, big battle amongst a lot of these lower basin states right now when we're talking about Colorado River. But what is Arizona gonna do in terms of preparing for a drier future? What investments do we need to make? Everything costs money at this point, right? So how are those dollars going to get allocated? I think Republicans are going to be very strategic and make sure that their priorities are in alignment with what voters want in terms of, you know, like Raquel said, affordability, cost of living, et cetera. What can they do to make sure that Arizona voters are better positioned in 2026 than they were in 2025 when it comes from just a cost and cost of living standpoint?
All right, very quickly, just yes or no answer here. Will Governor Hobbs break her own veto record this year? Raquel, what
100%.
Do you think? Yeah, okay.
Yes. Oh, I agree. Yeah.
100%.
It'll be even more intense in an election year.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Something to look forward to for the year then. Yes. All right. Lorna Romero Ferguson, Raquel Teran, thanks to you both for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.